breeze, brushing up against their minds just as softly. Cole and I had decided the order I should work in to make the shift in plan seem the most natural, which meant starting with Agent Sen. I stood behind her, back to back, as she studied the map and made adjustments to the initial lists of who was driving with who. Having opened her mind once meant the second trip in was easier than fitting a key into a greased lock. With each agent, I started to feel myself slowing down more and more, forced to fight through scenes of bleak violence, training, dreams. I'd spent 6 months with these people, but it took me less than 2 hours to finally understand the trajectory of their hatred. For Gray, for us, for everything that stood in their way. There was so much aching loss between them, they created a black hole that sucked one another in. When I finished, I felt like a rock that had survived a landslide, steady enough to go 3 doors down the hall to deal with Clancy Gray. I nudged his side with my foot, a bit harder than I maybe needed to. "Wake up." He groaned, eyes bleary as I shone the flashlight directly into his face. "If this chat doesn't involve cutting my hands free, a mirror, either of the Stewart brothers' messy and untimely deaths, or a clean pair of clothes, I'm not interested." I hooked my heel over his arm, forcing him to roll onto his back. He glowered up at me through the dark fringe that hung over his eyes in spikes. The slime from the sewers he'd taken to escape HQ had faded from a sickly-looking black to a dry, crusty gray that flaked off him when he so much as cocked a brow. "No food," he snorted. "Using deprivation as torture is so direct." "This isn't torture," I said, rolling my eyes. "At least not in the traditional sense. I don't know that Clancy was all that bothered that we kept him separate from the others, in a kind of solitary confinement. I think what bothered him was that he was being blocked from information, only able to catch snatches of conversation through the wall. That was Clancy Gray's perfect hell. That and the filthy clothes that stuck to his skin in odd places." I held up the sweatpants and t-shirt and dropped them onto his face. "I'm going to cut your hands and feet free, and I'm going to give you a rag and bucket of water to clean yourself up with. And then you are going to come quietly and do exactly as I say." I used the small knife Cole had given me to cut the zip tie around his ankles, ignoring the welts circling the skin there. "What's going on?" he asked, sitting up. "What are you doing?"
"We're moving."
"Where?" Clancy asked, rubbing his wrists once they were free, too. "I heard there's an old meat locker a few blocks away. That would be an upgrade." I turned my back as he stripped down, throwing the rag back over my shoulder in his general direction. I kept my eyes focused on the floor, listening to him scrub himself down. "Of course it would be too much to ask for warm water," he groused. "I don't even get a blanket." He stopped moving. I heard the rag slop against the tile floor and glanced back over my shoulder, keeping my gaze above his bare shoulders. His eyes were narrowed at me, clearly working a thought through. "What's really going on?"
"We're moving,"
I repeated, fighting back the usual swell of disgust. He didn't get information. He didn't get anything other than the little he didn't even deserve. When I didn't elaborate, I felt the tickling sensation at the back of my skull as his mind casually tried to bump up against mine, as if knocking to get in. I shut it down, picturing a door slamming in his face. He flinched at the force of it.
"You're going to trade me. Turn me in," he said in a tight voice. "That's why you're getting me all cleaned up."
If it hadn't been so close to what the agents were planning for us, I would have tried torturing him with the possibility. As it was, I didn't have the stomach for it.
"You'd like that, wouldn't you? Bend a few of the PSFs to your will, orchestrate an escape."
"Wow. So you are still capable of speaking sentences that contain more than 3 words.
Clancy said, sliding the clean shirt over his head and dragging the sweatpants up, one leg at a time. He looked paler than I remembered, as thin and shadowed as the rest of us.
How are you still so angry? Don't tell me this is about that stupid kid.
I don't remember anything that happened after I landed the first punch on his jaw, only that when I came back to my senses, there were arms locked around my waist and I was still thrashing, trying to break free.
Hey! Hey! Cool it!
Cole released me and shoved me away from both him and Clancy.
You're better than that. Get a grip!
I pressed a fist against my chest, gasping for breath. Clancy still had his arms up over his head when Cole lifted him onto his feet, dragged his hands behind his back, and fastened a new zip tie. He jammed an old pillowcase we'd been using as a hood down over him next, knotting it to ensure it'd stay on. Without another word, he dragged me over to the door, anger drawing deep lines in his face.
"I need you focused," he hissed.
"We're going to be driving for hours, and he'll be in the car with us the whole time. If he tries something, you have to be the one to shut it down."
I stared at Clancy, taking in the way he angled his head toward us. Who's to say he wasn't trying something right now on Cole? He'd controlled far more people in far worse circumstances. This would be nothing for him. I'd just assumed that physically separating him from the others would be enough to protect them. But what if it wasn't?
"So, we're going for a car ride," he called over.
I searched Cole's face for a hint of Clancy's influence, pushing down the bubble of fear in my chest. His eyes were sharp, not glassy, and there wasn't that blank quality to him. In fact, he was smirking.
"Isn't there a way to knock him out?" I murmured.
"It would be safer, for all of us."
"Only by force, and I'd rather not run the risk of accidentally giving him a traumatic brain injury."
Then, louder, he added,
"He'll be riding in the trunk. Tied up, gagged, helpless. Just the way I like him."
Clancy's head snapped in our direction, and if I didn't know him as well as I did, I could have sworn there was an edge of desperation to his voice.
"Oh, there's no need for any of that. You're not riding in the back seat," Cole said. "It's too risky. What if someone sees you, or you try to escape?"
Clancy scoffed.
"And separate myself from the Project Snowfall research before I can get rid of it?"
Cole shot me a look, tongue caught between his teeth as he grinned. An unexpected bonus of showing it to the Greens? Clancy had no idea we'd taken the precaution of backing the research up, so to speak.
"Ah, now, that does sound reasonable, doesn't it, Jim?"
I pulled him farther into the hallway, shutting the door behind us.
"Maybe taking him with us is a bad idea. If he gets loose in the ranch, he could ruin everything."
I clenched my hands at my sides, trying to work through the revulsion, the memory of how stupid I had been to ever think I'd had Clancy under my control. Some people came into the world and never once looked up to see the lives around them. They were so focused on what they wanted, what they needed. No one else mattered to them. They disconnected from sympathy and pity and guilt. Some people came into the world as monsters. I understood that now.
"Hey," Cole said quietly, "you think I don't want to strangle the life right out of him, too?"
"He has more faces than a pair of dice," I warned. "If something doesn't benefit him directly, he won't play along. And if it threatens him..."
"He's no match for you, Jim."
"I wish that were the case." I shook my head.
"Let's focus on what he has to offer if we can get him in a place where he wants to work with us," Cole said. "The intel, the insight into how his father thinks, even his value as a potential trade."
"He's too unpredictable." Even if we turned him over to his father, there was still a good chance he could escape and cause even more havoc. Was it better that he came with us, if only so we could keep an eye on him?
"You keep forgetting that, in the end, we want the same thing he does," Cole said, clearly fighting the urge to roll his eyes. "We all want his father out of office."
"No," I said, glancing back in at the figure kneeling on the floor. "He wants his father ruined. There's a difference. The only question is if you're willing to risk being part of the fallout when he figures out how to do it."
I realized a second too late that resecuring Clancy's hands with a zip tie meant having to feed him myself. He glared and spat at me like a cat furious at having its claws clipped. My skin crawled. All in all, a thoroughly unpleasant experience for everyone. Liam greeted my return to the other room with a sympathetic look and a bag of potato chips, patting the ground next to him. Half of the room looked dazed by the excessively early hour. The other half was pacing in anxious circles. The wind had picked up outside, screaming as it whipped around the edges of the warehouse and passed through the cracks in the roof. It made for an eerily appropriate soundtrack to the morning.
"Okay, I'll make this quick," Cole began. "We'll be splitting into teams and dividing ourselves between the three exit points. If the location you're assigned is compromised in any way, soldiers present, shady-looking folks hanging around, anything, head to the next closest."
Just to the side of him, Sen wore a smug little smile as she surveyed the kid sitting on the floor. I almost smiled myself, a small thrill of control trickling through me. Good riddance, I thought.
"Once you have your assignment," Cole continued, "check it against the map for your car locations and the routes listed next to them. Team A is me, Ruby, Liam, Vida, Nico, our guest, and what's-his-face, the one in the prissy button-down."
Liam threw his hands up in exasperation. Chubbs only shrugged.
"Better than Granny, and for the record, Chubbs."
"Not Nico," I cut in. He couldn't be trusted to use his judgment around Clancy, and I couldn't be trusted not to make him pay if he slipped again. I saw Nico disappear from the edge of my vision, fading to the back of the group. Liam's hand tightened around mine, but I refused to glance up and meet what I knew was a look of disappointment. He didn't understand.
"Fine," Cole said. "Nico, you'll go with Team D."
"Am I the guest?" I hadn't realized Senator Cruz was in the room until she spoke up.
"You're with Team C. Team A has our less welcome guest."
He must have informed her of Clancy's presence because her only response to that was a soft, "Oh, I see." He ran through the details of each route the teams would be taking upstate. All involved sticking to surface streets, which added on hours and wasted gas, but ensured a safer trip. There was a single moment of silence after he finished speaking, as if everyone needed a moment to absorb his words. Cole pointed at me.
"Go grab him." "Once you have your group," he continued as I exited the room, "go, get the hell out of here. Good luck, and take care of each other. We'll see you up north."
Clancy struggled to his feet as I entered the room, his hands bound, his head still tucked inside the pillowcase.
"We are going now? What time is it?"
I pulled it off him for the moment. "Any sign of you messing with anyone?"
"And I'm dead. God, you're as annoying as my old nanny." "I understand," Clancy snapped.
He turned around and nudged me with his bound hands.
"This is going to be just as suspicious as the hood. If something happens, I might need to use my hands."
"Nothing is going to happen," I said, hooking my hand around his arm and drawing him out into the hallway, then back into the room to avoid being trampled, as the different teams ran to the building's different exits.
"Ready?"
Cole called to me from the window as I pulled Clancy into the room. Annabelle Cruz was still standing there, huddled between the two agents that were responsible for her. At the sight of Clancy, she froze. He smirked, taking her in from head to toe.
"Enough," I said. "Leave her alone or I'll push you out of the window." "I'd like to request that honor,"
Liam said as he helped me up next. He glanced back toward Sen and shot me a questioning look as the woman adjusted the straps of the backpack containing the cure research. I put a reassuring hand on his arm, then turned back, gripping Clancy's shoulder to steady him as he swung his leg up over the frame. His shoe caught on something and he went tumbling out of my hands, landing headfirst on the fire escape in a disgruntled heap.
"I see I'll be afforded no dignity in this,"
he growled as he straightened up, awkwardly trying to adjust his shirt with his hands bound. I leaned over the steps, tracking Cole's progress. He was already back on solid ground, a gun in his hands, surveying the nearby windows with a look of focused intensity I'd seen on Liam's face so many times. The wind was tearing at his hair, making his jacket billow out around him. It blew me forward a step.
As far as Stuarts are concerned, he's probably the better choice. Handsome, the bad boy. Seems more your taste,
Clancy reasoned, following my gaze. Clearly, he didn't understand my taste at all. I didn't let myself look back to check on Vida, Chubbs, and Liam until we were down on the street, too, our backs pressed to the building.
Anything? I asked Cole.
He shook his head.
All clear.
We headed one block east to walk along the railroad tracks lining the Los Angeles River. Our exit was approximately 13 blocks north, but those would be 13 dark, silent, and tense blocks. Already, I felt a shiver of anxiety run down my spine as I looked back, but it was too dark to see the group of kids trailing behind us. Cole had warned them to wait 10 minutes before following us through the exit, just on the off chance that something went wrong and they'd need the buffer of distance to run. Nice for them. I kept my gaze ahead and my grip on Clancy's arm firm. His skin felt unbearably warm against my hand. The morning had the city in a chilly grip without the sun there to burn it away, but it was like none of it touched him, like nothing could. Cole's hand shot up as he halted us in place with a sharp intake of breath. Clancy, curious, leaned in over my shoulder to see what the issue was.
Ah, he said, moving away. Good luck with this one.
Our route took us under the 101 freeway, where it formed a bridge over the Los Angeles River and nearby rail tracks. From what I'd seen in the soldiers' memories, the Army had blocked off the tracks below with overturned train cargo cars and floodlights. On the freeway, there'd been two Humvees and more lights pointing in toward us. And there they were. I counted them as we made our careful, silent approach. I didn't see the problem at all. Not until the first of three shadowy figures appeared on the ledge of the freeway's elevated road. Their arms were raised in a way that made me think they must have been peering through binoculars. Cole dropped to his stomach on the tracks. I forced Clancy down with me. Chubbs began to ask,
"What's going on?"
But someone, Vida, muffled him.
"Damn it, damn it, damn it, damn it!"
Fear rippled through me. How did I get this so wrong? It was still pitch black outside, but we had already passed into the faint edge of the floodlight's glow. There was a low curse from Cole as he turned and motioned us back with his hands. Vida pulled out a handgun and shuffled back on her belly, dragging Chubbs with her, a hand knotted in his shirt. The wind kicked up the back of my jacket, exposing my bare skin to the chilling air. To our left, the tin-like sheets of metal lining the tracks were rattling as if they were on the verge of exploding. "Go slow," I coached myself. "Don't panic. Go slow." Sudden movements or loud noises would only draw the soldiers' attention. There was a crack, like broken bone, as a whole section of the wall's metal siding flew off, catching a burst of wind and flinging itself straight toward us. I ducked down, covering my free hand with my head, my brain already calculating how fast we'd have to get up and run once the sheet slammed into the tracks and started banging around. But one pounding heartbeat. Two. Three. With the exception of the wind and my own heavy breathing, there was nothing but quiet. I lifted my head, catching Cole's shocked expression as it morphed into relief, and twisted around to see why. Liam had a hand outstretched in the direction of the huge piece of siding. It was frozen in place where it had struck the ground on its first dangerous bounce and was still angled toward us. The rusted metal stood upright, shaking like a strained muscle, but otherwise still. His face was a stony mask of concentration. I'd seen him lift and throw things much heavier with his abilities, but the force of the wind and our exposure to it was warring with his control. Chubbs shifted, but Liam said quietly,
"I have it."
Cole snapped once to get my attention, pointing up at the freeway.
The figures we had seen there, the soldiers, were moving again. The floodlights that were trained on us switched off, just as another military truck drove up alongside the two vehicles already posted there. It took me a moment to understand what was actually happening.
They're there to swap out the cars and lights, not to patrol, not as lookouts.
One of the Humvees rumbled to life, made a wide turn across the empty freeway lanes, and sped west. I kept my eyes on the shrinking taillights before squinting up toward the floodlights again. No movement. Gone. Cole had come to the same conclusion. He rose slowly onto his knees, then his feet, waving for us to do the same. Liam let out one last grunt, using his abilities to lift the metal siding up in an arc over us and throw it in the direction of the Los Angeles River's dry cement bed. He let his brother haul him to his feet, but pushed him away.
"For someone who sucks so bad at sports, those were some surprisingly decent reflexes."
"That must be thank you in a language I don't speak," Liam said, his jaw set as he turned to look ahead.
"Can we get moving?"
Cole stared at him a moment longer, his face unreadable.
"All right, let's roll."
By the time we reached Glendale on foot, the sun was up and shining over us. The area, despite being outside of the de facto perimeter the military had set up, was still close enough to the damage to have prompted either an official or panic-induced evacuation. There wasn't a soul alive around us. Cole had gone ahead to scout the nearby streets just to be sure, but there was this feeling, an unnatural buzz along my skin, that prevented me from relaxing. I kept my head up, scanning every corner, the nearby roofs, even the horizon of Los Angeles's ruined skyline for its source. What started as a billowing thundercloud of unease was becoming sharper, taking on more distinct edges. I was afraid it wouldn't fully take shape until it was already raining down over us like knives. The dusting of ash and soot out here had been washed into stagnant puddles by the rain a few nights before. I shook my head. It all just seemed strange. The buildings weren't wearing any opened wounds, were stained a faint gray, not the menacing black of the inner city. I stepped over the cement block marking a parking space and squinted at the building, a locked-up grocery store.
"There,"
Cole said, pointing at something past the small shopping center, a parking lot, with its tall street lamps on and flickering.
"Thank God,"
Chubb said as we crossed from one parking lot into the next. He stared up at the lights like he'd never seen one before. Liam was already moving toward the nearest dark blue sedan, pulling a bent wire coat hanger from the black backpack slung over his shoulder. He jimmied the lock so quickly, Cole didn't even catch on until Liam bent over the driver's seat, pulling out wires from beneath the dashboard, trying to spark some life back into the engine by hot-wiring it.
"What?"
Chubbs called.
"No minivan?"
"Whoa, whoa, whoa,"
Cole said as the engine finally sputtered to life. He pulled Liam out and did something that killed the motor.
"Christ, who the hell taught you that?"
"Who do you think?"
Liam snapped, ripping his arm out of Cole's hand.
"Harry?"
Cole let out a disbelieving laugh.
"Don't they take away your halo if you teach an impressionable youth how to steal a car?"
Liam's look could have peeled the paint off the sedan.
"Are you finished?"
"No, I'm just..."
Cole was picking at a scab, I realized, and he didn't even know it.
"Harry. Harry Boy Scout Troop Leader Stewart taught you."
"Why?"
"Because he trusted me not to abuse it."
Liam turned a bitter smile on him.
"What, you didn't get a lesson?"
The look Cole shot back was even colder than Liam's words had been. The fingers on his right hand gave a small spasm before he could tuck his hand into the back pocket of his pants.
"God, even Stewart family drama is boring,"
Clancy said sullenly.
"I thought we were in a hurry."
"We are." I turned to Liam. "Did that car have any gas in it?" He nodded.
"Enough to get us 100 miles, I'd guess."
"Grand," Cole said, "except we're not taking that one. There's a tan SUV over there that has your name on it."
Liam turned,
took one look at it, and shook his head.
It's a gas guzzler. They're top-heavy and more likely to roll in an accident.
His brother silenced him by holding up his hand and pressing his fingers together in such a condescending way, it pissed me off, too.
Are you planning on getting into an accident?
Then shut the hell up and do what I tell you.
You don't get to make that call.
Yes, I do. I'm in charge here, whether you like it or not. I'm the one that's been out in the field. I'm the one that's going to get us out of here.
And I'm the one telling you to pick yourself an SUV in case we have to take it off the road.
Liam took a step forward.
If we have to go off-road, we're pretty much screwed anyway. I'd rather have a car that won't devour gas.
He glanced my way, tilting his head in a silent, back me up. I bit my lip, shaking my head. Not this fight. This one wasn't worth it. Cole was making quick strides back in our direction from a nearby red pickup truck, and nothing was going to turn him from it. All those months ago, when it had just been the four of us in a minivan making our way along back roads, siphoning gas from other cars like vultures picking the last stringy pieces of meat off bones, we'd functioned on two simple principles. Move fast, don't get seen. For better or worse, most of our decisions had been gut reactions, and I wasn't about to pretend we hadn't made some questionable choices, but it was the only way we knew how to live and survive. It was how all of us freak kids had to scrape by, whether it was to avoid camps or skip tracers. And looking at Cole now, at the irritation sweeping over his features, it was never more obvious to me that he knew almost nothing about what his brother's life had been like after Liam escaped the League's training program. He was one of us by technicality, but outside of witnessing the cruel treatment of the kids in Lita's psionic research program, he'd never been forced to adapt to our reality. They'd already fought about the driving arrangements earlier that morning, saving us a little time now. I spared one last glance at the three figures piling into Cole's chosen SUV before tugging Clancy in the direction of the red truck Cole gestured to. It felt strange to not have all of us piled into one car, but I understood Cole's reasoning immediately, even if Liam didn't. It was the same reason I'd basically had the sole pleasure of babysitting Clancy over the past 2 weeks, feeding him and dealing with his wounded ego. If I drove, the other orange had less of a chance of commandeering the car because I could block him out. If one of the others was driving, it would only be a matter of time before Clancy slid into their thoughts and took control. I could see it happening as clearly as if the kid had planted the scene in my mind. I would have preferred Cole in the other car too, but that had been non-negotiable. The fact that it was just as likely for Clancy to hijack his mind and command him to use his gun or knife on me hadn't seemed to occur to him. The gas tank was half full and the engine already hot-wired and running. Cole had snapped Clancy's zip ties off and attached new ones so his hands could both rest in his lap and be hooked through the seatbelt, and his feet could be bound to one of the bars running under the seat. Cole pulled the pillowcase over the kid's head. It was just a matter of taking a deep breath and shifting the truck out of park. I looked up one last time at the skeleton of a city caught in my rearview mirror and tightened my hands on the steering wheel. We were finally leaving that terrible place and what we'd buried there. 20 minutes of driving, however, made a few things crystal clear. The truck didn't have working air conditioning. Its owner's body odor had been absorbed into the faux leather seats, and, yes, my window was broken. To my right, Clancy had bent over at the waist and was either sleeping or trying to subtly rub the pillowcase against his legs to pull it off. Cole, just to his right, was scanning the passing streets. The early afternoon light stood out in sharp contrast to the dark smudges beneath his eyes. It was like, now that he was still, not rushing around or barking out orders, his body had finally settled into its aches and exhaustion. He rolled his shoulders back against the press of the seatbelt and grimaced. Cole had shown me where we were headed on a map, a town called Lodi, a little ways south of Sacramento. If we'd been able to take the freeway, it would have been a straight shot up the coast, 5 hours max,
Less than that, if flights and trains had still been operational, and Gray hadn't ordered ships to patrol the Pacific coast. I looked back over my shoulder to the SUV behind us. Liam must have been waiting for it, because he lifted his hand in a reassuring wave. In the front passenger seat beside him, Chubbs was going on and on about something, his hands waving to emphasize each word. The sight was familiar and comforting enough to almost chase away the strangeness of the city around us. Burbank, California, had been, by all definitions, a city brimming with life and commotion. Its importance had only grown in recent years. So many media companies already had studios or headquarters there, and many of the others in nearby cities had moved as well, either through mergers or deals to share equipment. Seeing the city streets so silent and empty, I wondered if Gray had already swept in to shut the place down. Where the hell is everyone? It was like driving through the worst of the economically ravaged towns back east. I half expected to see an old newspaper dramatically catch the breeze and fly across the street like a tumbleweed. I felt my pulse kick up. The same shadow I'd felt behind us in Los Angeles was back and growling in my head like thunder.
"I don't like this," Cole said, as if sensing my thoughts. "Make your next right."
If I hadn't looked back into the rearview mirror to signal to Liam, I wouldn't have seen it at all. The SUV was there one moment and gone the next. The sound the military Humvee made as it crashed into the Ford Explorer felt like someone took a bat to the back of my skull. I jerked the wheel as the other car rolled once, glass and rubber exploding in every direction as it righted itself again, rocking hard against the sidewalk. I slammed my foot onto the brake pedal, sending the truck into a skid. Clancy choked as his seatbelt snapped tight over his chest. He tried to brace himself with his bound hands against the dashboard.
"What?" he demanded. "What the hell was that?"
But it was Cole I should have been worried about. I was still fighting with my seatbelt when his face, rigid with shock, transformed. The sound that escaped his throat was too ragged, too strangled to be a scream. It didn't sound human at all. He threw his door open, but didn't run toward the military vehicle or the two soldiers who were approaching the tan SUV with their weapons drawn. Cole took one step forward as I jumped down from the truck, and, with no other warning than his right hand tightening into a fist at his side, the Humvee burst into a ball of fire. The wave of pressure that came off the small explosion sent me stumbling back against the truck. It blew out the windows of nearby buildings and the back windshield of our pickup. The two soldiers were thrown onto the street, tackled from behind by the force of it. Cole moved toward them, unnervingly calm. His pistol was drawn out of the holster at his side, aimed with his usual precision. One shot, delivered to the face of the young soldier closest to the SUV. The other found himself hauled up, his helmet ripped away, and Cole's fist slammed again and again into his face. I couldn't watch. Wouldn't. My heart was banging against my ribcage as I ran for the SUV. Shards of tinted glass from the windows crunched underfoot. The driver's side doors had taken the brunt of the impact, but there was movement. Liam's wide eyes met mine through what was left of the windshield.
"Are you okay?"
I called, wincing at the sound of one last gunshot piercing the air. Liam was sitting straight up, his hands clenched in a death-like grip on the steering wheel. His face was drained of all color, save for the red mark stamped across the left side of his face, and the rapidly purpling bridge of his swelling nose. The deflated airbags hung limp in his lap.
"Oh my God," I gasped. "You guys..."
Chubbs had already crawled into the back with Vida and was squinting as he examined a gash across her temple. His dark skin had taken on an ashy quality. The burning vehicle was eating up the fresh air around us, sending wave after wave of shimmering heat against my back. The roar of it consuming the metal and glass forced me to shout around the smoke I was already half-choking on.
"Okay?"
I called back to them. Vida gave me a thumbs up, swallowing hard, as if she didn't trust herself to speak just yet.
"Liam?"
My hands shook like crazy as I tried to work the handle on the front door, the enormous metal indentation popping and protesting. There was so much adrenaline running through me, it was amazing I didn't rip the whole thing off its hinges.
Liam? Liam, can you hear me?
He turned toward me slowly, coming out of his stupor.
I told him it would roll.
I almost sobbed in relief as I reached through the window and kissed him.
You did.
I told him.
You did. I know you did, I said, low and soothing, as I reached in to unbuckle his seatbelt. Are you hurt? Anything feel broken?
Shoulder hurts.
He squeezed his eyes shut, bracing himself against the pain.
Chubbs, everyone. We're okay,
Chubbs called, his voice surprisingly steady despite the congested tone it had taken on. When he turned toward us, I saw blood running down from his nostrils over his lips.
I think his shoulder is dislocated. Ruby, do you see my glasses? I lost them when the airbags inflated.
What happened? Vida asked, pointing at the fire. How did...
Bullet to the gas tank. Lucky shot,
came Cole's voice behind me. They were either too muddled or too terrified to really think the improbability of it through. Cole shouldered me out of the way to get to the door's handle himself. After a moment of hesitation, I ducked around to the passenger side, forced the stubborn door open, and knelt down. I felt along the carpet until my fingers brushed his glasses, or what was left of them.
Did you find them?
He asked.
What's wrong?
I held the mangled frames and cracked but whole lenses up for Vida to see. In a rare moment of sympathy, she gave him a pat on the shoulder and said,
Yeah, she's got them, Gran.
The driver's side door finally came open with a scream of metal against metal. Liam rolled, trying to get his left foot out from where it was pinned under the mangled dashboard. All the while, he clutched his left arm against his side, trying to keep it from being jostled.
Damn it, you stupid kid,
Cole said, emotion simmering just beneath the surface. His right hand twitched and jerked as he reached inside to help his brother.
Damn you! How hard is it to not get yourself killed on my watch?
Trying,
Liam said between gritted teeth.
Christ, that hurts!
Give me your arm,
Cole said.
This is going to suck, but... Are you doing it?
Chubbs was asking.
Make sure you're in the proper position.
I don't know what was worse, the sound of Liam's shoulder socket realigning or his howl of pain that followed.
We need to move,
Vida said, kicking the SUV's back door open.
This piece of shit is totaled. We have to get into the bed of the truck, but standing around here crying over each other is going to get us shot, and fast.
Glasses?
Chubbs called, holding out his hand in what he must have thought was my direction. Vida took that hand and looped it through her arm, accepting the twisted wire frames from me. I stopped her, just for a second, to make sure that she really was okay. Banged up, bruised, but not bleeding. What a goddamn miracle this was.
Clancy!
I spun back around to face the truck, heart paralyzed for the instant it took to spot his dark outline through the truck's back window.
Shit!
This is how we'd lose him. Chaos. Carelessness. I'd panicked. My mind had just blanked out with terror, and I'd run. I hadn't even thought to take the keys out of the ignition. If Cole hadn't bound his legs, he'd be in the wind by now. Be better than this, I thought, my nails digging into the palms of my hands. You have to be better than this. The adrenaline was slow to leave my system. I couldn't keep from shaking, not entirely.
You know, Granny,
Vida's voice drew my attention back toward them.
You have actually not sucked in this crisis.
I can't see your face, so I can't tell how sincere that was,
Chubbs said. I slid the backpack fully onto my back, jogging around to where Cole was helping a limping Liam around the bodies of the downed soldiers, toward the truck. I couldn't bring myself to look at them, or assess what Cole had done in his moment of rage. Liam braced his bad arm against his chest. I slid my hand around the small of his back to help steady him, but really, to reassure myself he was fine. Alive. Liam tilted his head toward me and said,
"Kiss me again."
I did, soft and quick, right at the corner of his lips where there was a small white scar. Seeing my expression, he added,
"Saw my life flash before my eyes. Not enough kissing."
Cole snorted, but his whole body was still tense with anger he couldn't release.
"Wow, kid. Unusually smooth for you."
We lifted Liam onto the flatbed, laying him out next to Chubbs, who was clutching the broken remains of his glasses over his heart.
"Aw, damn,"
Liam said, seeing them.
"I'm sorry, buddy." "Prescription,"
he said in a low, mournful voice.
"They were prescription lenses."
Cole yanked the sheet of electric blue tarp out from under his brother and spread it over them.
"What are you doing?"
Vida demanded, already trying to sit up.
"Stay down and stay covered. We're going to get as far as we can away from here and switch cars. Chances are they radioed this one in."
"I would like to register the fact that this fucking sucks," she said.
"Noted,"
he said, shutting the gate. I climbed back up behind the wheel again, soaking in the vibrations from the running engine. Clancy had finally gotten his hood up and off him, and even though I didn't look over, I saw him watching me out of the corner of my eye. For the first time in weeks, the sullen irritation that had coated his every mood was gone, and he was smiling. His gaze shifted away, over to Cole, who slammed his door shut hard enough to rock the whole vehicle. In his lap was what looked like a leather pouch and a pistol that he must have taken off one of the soldiers. They both slid around as his hand continued to jerk, spasm, until he finally tucked it beneath his leg. The sight made my brain think, Mason, red, fire. It plucked at loose threads at the back of my mind until I saw the pattern of how they were woven together. The reds at Thurmond had moved strangely. They lurched when others walked, jabbed when others waved. But I'd just assumed the awkward jerks were because of the restraints the PSFs kept them in. But Mason? The kids in Nashville, they'd called him Twitch. Twitch, because of the way his whole body spasmed with its strange rhythm. I thought, I don't know that I'd even really thought about why. I'd just assumed it had something to do with the way he was trained, the way the government had broken his mind trying to mold him into the perfect soldier. All of them. All of the Reds. They all must have had some version of this physical tick. And if I was able to recognize it after only being around a few of them, then how could someone who had been there, to make suggestions for and contribute to and witness the training, miss the signs?
Clancy,
I started to say.
This is too good,
he said with a bark of laughter. Cole stiffened, his face turning to stone. The fury burning his pale eyes softened, going out of focus. I knew that look. I threw my mind at Clancy's, but it was like driving into a wall. I was thrown back, with a sting that zipped across my skull and turned into a pounding ache. We didn't have time for me to break the connection that way, before something would happen, before he'd turn Cole into his little action figure. I drew my elbow up and hit him right where Instructor Johnson had taught me, in the temple. Clancy's eyes rolled back, and he slumped forward, knocking his forehead against the dashboard. The wheels spun as I floored the gas pedal, trying to outrun the signal fire Cole had created. The smoke would be hard to miss for any helicopters or patrols. I didn't need to think about the consequences of Clancy knowing. I just needed to get us the hell out of here. My temples were still pounding, and my heart was still sputtering at an unnatural speed when I looked over and saw Cole rub his forehead.
"What the fuck?"
The words grew louder each time he repeated them until he was roaring them.
"What the fuck?"
I smelled smoke, saw how badly he shook. "Cole, listen to me. You have to calm down, okay? Calm down. It's okay."
He fumbled with the leather case in his lap, ripping out a vial of clear liquid and a syringe. I tried to look between him and the road as he filled it, but missed my opportunity to stop him before he slammed the needle down into the back of Clancy's neck.
Cole!
That'll keep the little shit under, until the urge to beat his ass into next Tuesday passes, he growled. Shit! That was nothing like the way you did it at HQ! Shit!
He tossed the syringe and bottle back into the pouch and let them slide down the dashboard. His hand was steady now, but his anxiety charged the air. It made me feel like I was sitting next to someone who was debating whether or not to light a fuse. He turned back toward the window, watching the buildings around us blur, but I could see his face in the reflection there, and it said everything he couldn't. He hadn't been in control when the Humvee caught fire, not even remotely.
What did he show you?
Myself.
What do you mean?
Cole leaned his forehead against the glass and shut his eyes.
It was a red camp, somewhere. What they did to the poor kids to train them. I saw how everyone must see us, if that makes any sense. It was just... It felt like I was being smothered with smoke. There was nothing in their expressions, but for a second, I was scared shitless. It was like I was really there. They had me, and I was next.
I'm sorry, I said, unable to keep the tightness out of my voice. I realized what was happening a second too late. I should have...
It's my fault he figured it out,
Cole said sharply.
Don't take that blame, Jim. It's not yours to shoulder. You told me he was involved with Project Jamboree. I should have checked myself instead of acting like a monster. It's just... Damn it!
He slammed his fist against the door.
I wasn't thinking at all. I just... It won. For a minute, it won.
His words wrapped around my heart like a fist. I knew that feeling. It didn't matter how much power you possessed, how useful your abilities were. They had a will of their own. If you weren't constantly on top of them, they found ways to crawl out from under you.
Those kids. Those greens and blues especially. It all comes to them so easily, doesn't it?
Cole said quietly.
Easier to control. Easier to hide. It doesn't fuck up their lives the way it does for us. We have to be focused, otherwise we slip. And we can't slip.
Liam, Aunt Chubbs, and Vida, and all of them, hadn't been able to understand how much work went into controlling what I could do, so it didn't control me. Loosening my grip on the leash even for a second could mean hurting someone, hurting myself. It feels like I'm always at the edge of it, and I can't step in, not without feeling so damn scared I'm going to ruin everything. I want to stop ruining every good thing that comes my way. I couldn't control it for a really long time.
And you think I can? Jesus! Half the time I feel it boiling me alive under my skin. It simmers and simmers and simmers until I finally release the pressure. It was like that even when I was a kid.
Cole let out a faint, humorless laugh.
It wasn't like a voice or anything. Not one that whispered to me. It was just this urge, I guess. It was like I was always standing too close to a fire and needed to just stick my hand in once to see how hot it really was. I couldn't sleep at night. I thought for sure it was because my dad was actually the devil. Really, truly, the Prince of Darkness himself.
Harry? I asked, confused.
No, bio-dad. Harry's...
Right, forgot, I said.
Lee talks about him a lot, then?
He didn't wait for me to confirm before continuing.
Yeah, our real dad. That man. Dumb as a bag of hammers, mean as a snake. Not a good combination. I still fantasize about looking him up, breaking into the old house, and setting his whole world on fire.
Liam only brought him up once, I said, trying not to pry, no matter how much I wanted to. This was the one part of his life Liam wasn't willing to share, and as horrible as it was,
It only made me want to pick at the scab more. When he lost his temper.
Good. Hopefully that means he doesn't remember the half of it. The guy was... he was a monster. He was the devil himself when he got his temper up. Guess one of us was bound to be a chip off the old block. I used to wonder, you know, if the abilities we have are somehow dependent on something we already have inside us. I thought, this fire, this is his anger. This is my dad's rage.
I knew it wouldn't do anything, or at least reassurance had never done much when it was delivered to me, but I had to say it. I had to tell him. You're not a monster.
Don't monsters breathe fire? Don't they burn down kingdoms and countries?
Cole sent me a wry smile.
You call yourself that too, don't you? No matter how many times others tell you it's not true, you've seen the proof. You can't trust yourself.
I settled back against my seat, wondering, for the very first time, if he wasn't just as desperate as the rest of us for a cure. This isn't about the camps for you, is it? I asked. It's about the cure. His throat bobbed as he swallowed.
Got it on the first try. Feel free to think I'm an asshole.
Why? Because you don't want to suffer like this? I asked sharply. Because you want to be normal?
What's normal?
Cole asked.
Pretty sure none of us remember what that feels like.
Fine, I pressed. Then, because you want a life where you're free from all of this bullshit? I want the cure more than I want my next breath. I never used to. I never let myself think of the future. And now it's like a compulsion. I want that freedom so badly, and it seems like the more I strain to try and reach it, the further away it gets. Cole rubbed his hand over his face, nodding.
I underestimate it sometimes. You forget, because you function, and each time you get kicked down, you manage to pick yourself up. But now, it's starting to get harder, right?
Yes. It was the first time I'd admitted it. The word was as hollow as I felt.
It's not that I don't think I won't be able to get up. It's that I'm afraid one day I'll just explode, combust, take out everyone I care about because I can't stop myself from feeling so damn angry all the time.
He pulled up his hand, holding it in front of his face, waiting for it to spasm again. When it didn't happen, his gaze shifted down to Clancy.
They keep them locked in these white rooms. Lights are on the whole time, and there are voices. Voices that don't stop, that are constantly telling them shit like, you're wrong, admit you're wrong so we can fix you. They hurt the kids. They really hurt them over and over. I could barely stand to see it, and I wasn't the one getting beaten. Was that real? Can he make stuff up?
My hands tightened around the wheel. He can plant any image he wants in your mind. But I think the truth is bad enough that he doesn't have to embellish it.
I don't know what pisses me off more, what they did to the kids, or that they figured out how to contain the fire in them. Shit, Jim. How the hell?
He shook his head as if to clear it.
If he tells any of the others, if he tells Liam... what am I supposed to do? None of the kids will come within 100 feet of me.
He's not going to, I promised. How much more of that stuff do you have? He unzipped the pouch.
3 more vials.
Then he'll stay out until we get to the ranch and we get him secured, I said. We'll keep him separated at all times, and I'll be the one he interacts with.
Killing him would be simpler.
There was nothing heated or furious about his words, and maybe that was why they were so disarming. Just cold, ruthless pragmatism. It was unsettling how fast the switch flipped. Can't, I reminded him, recycling one of his own arguments. He's the only one who knows where his mother is. You can't do anything to him, not until we find out where she is. I need the cure. Whatever it is, I need it. I hate him more than anything in the world, but I hate living this way more. I hate the idea of there not being an end to this. Cole turned back toward the window, watching the buildings blur around us.
Then you and me, Jem. We'll have to figure out a way to stay one step ahead of our monsters.
I nodded. My throat was tight with the need to cry, but the surprise of finally having someone who understood, who struggled not just with everything and everyone around them, but with themselves.
Are you sure this isn't a nightmare?
He asked quietly.
And that we won't just wake up?
I stared ahead at the road, the way the dust blowing in from the desert covered it with a faint golden sheen, even as gray clouds began to gather over us. Yes, I said after some time. Because dreamers always wake up and leave their monsters behind. 4. The rain started in with a clap of thunder just outside of Mojave, a small town situated at the base of the nearby mountain's craggy slopes. In the distance, over their jagged crowns, I could see the first hints of green.
That day's in,
Cole said, pointing to the small two-story complex hugging the corner.
Pull in there. We need to get them another car, and we need to switch ours out.
The town had been drained of its life some time ago, that much was clear by the complete and total lack of upkeep of its businesses and homes. It was a sight I'd grown used to over the past year, to the point that I didn't feel the creeping sense of dread that came with seeing empty playgrounds, or fresh dirt and graveyards, or homes that had been chained and boarded up. So, not even California, which had run independently from the rest of the nation under the federal coalition, had been immune to the new normal of economic strife that the rest of the country had been clawing through. People could be staying here, I said. They would stake it as their territory.
Look at the cars here, Cole said. The amount of dirt on them. They've been sitting here a while. I haven't seen any movement through the hotel's windows or around the perimeter. Have you? Park. Pull up right there, next to that gray Toyota.
I turned off the engine as he double-checked that Clancy was still out and still secured with zip ties. He went to inspect the other cars to find a working one with gas, and I jumped down from the driver's seat and all but ran around to the back to untie the tarp. The three of them sat up in unison, blinking against the dull light. Cool rain streaked down my face and neck as I helped the others down from the back. The air was thick with that strange, wonderful, indescribable smell that was unique to storms in the desert. Hey, I said, my hands closing around Liam's arms to steady him as he slid down off the bed. Are you all right? Liam nodded and squeezed my shoulder as he passed by.
Chubbs, wait! Damn it, buddy!
Without his glasses, the kid couldn't see a thing. Chubbs caught his toe on a pothole in the pavement and went down before Liam could reach him. After he used his good arm to get his friend back on his feet, he led Chubbs toward the edge of the motel's parking lot, and they disappeared around the corner. By the lack of explanation and how quickly they were moving, I took a guess about what kind of business they were conducting.
"Was it as special up front as it was in the back?" Vida asked, hopping down next to me.
Her joints popped as she stretched her arms and back.
No one's killed each other, I said.
Was it terrible back there?
Nah, Vida said with a shrug. A little uncomfortable and cold at some points. You took a sharp turn somewhere and Granny copped a feel by mistake. He looks like he wants to die of shame each time I bring it up. Basically, I'm going to milk that shit for all it's worth.
Do you have to? I asked pointedly.
Whatever. He was more pissed off by us playing a game of who could think of the worst nickname for him.
Let me guess. You won.
It was Boy Scout, actually. I mean, come on. Even I couldn't top Chubby Chubby Choo Choo. I almost pissed my pants laughing.
I made a mental note to give Chubbs a good long hug before we set off again. Glancing over to make sure the boys were making their way back toward us, a pop of color caught my eye. Shielding my eyes against the rain, I took a step toward the two small cement homes that were oddly positioned a short distance from the corner of the street.
A crude array of graffiti marred the cracked cement wall that separated the side of the house from the nearby parking spaces.
What? Vida asked. What's with that face?
Most of the art wasn't really art at all, and a good portion hadn't been spray-painted. I wiped the rain